listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kolula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Wake Up Hollywood, this is your host with the most, Nikki Kolula. We're going to jump right into this interview. We have an amazing returning guest, Mr. Chad Collins. How are you? Actor extraordinaire, I should say.
Amazing. My gosh. I'm going to keep you around, Nikki. What a wonderful intro. And it's, what's it been, 5 years? Since
it's been a while, man. But you've been keeping busy, man. It's always funny because it's like you see the artists that are out there hustling. You're out there hustling, and I respect that so much because, like, man, I'm an artist. I'm always hustling, and I always am like, man, when people aren't busy, I'm like, you need to be out there hustling, doing something, man, stirring the pots, getting things moving, somehow moving and shaking, and you've always been doing that. I saw in your bio you started as a publicist. How did we not talk about this before? Tell me how you started in publicity before you got into acting.
What a weird journey, man. I'm a cockroach, Nikki. I've survived a pandemic and some down years and now a 6 month actor strike, and we're still here doing the hustle, as you say.
That's right.
BG style. I've had the weirdest journey to where we are, you know, today. I was a journalism major in college. I came out to LA, you know, my last semester of school. I did an internship with a publicist. I kind of fell into that world here in the entertainment industry. And acting just kind of came in a little bit here, class here, giving it a try there. Never acted a day in my life. And wow. Was just, you know, and just kind of really, really grew fond of it. And just as I had the time, as I had the money, as I had the bravery to audition for things, you know, here we are so many years later. So I kind of left that side of the business to do acting full time about 7-8 years ago. And, you know, as you say, we're still here surviving.
Leap and the net will appear. That's what they say in the artist way, right? Mm-hmm. So did you grow up in Utah? Where did you grow up?
I grew up in upstate New York. I went to Ithaca College out there, a wonderful college down in Western New York. So, but I've been in LA for, gosh, I guess half my life now. So
I have a great friend from Schenectady, and I've actually toured a bunch of the SUNY schools in New York. So yep. I know the whole area, man. I know Ithaca, Schenectady. I know Albany. It's just such a cool part of New York that people don't realize because it's like so pretty and open. And you don't think about that when you think of New York City. You know, it's like the antithesis of New York.
Oh, yeah. No, you hear New York and you forget there's a whole other part of the state. New York is about this big, and then there's the whole rest of the state. So anything above New York City is upstate.
Did you spend a lot of like summers or any time in New York City seeing plays and kind of get the bug then? Or were you just kind of like always in the movies and TV? Like what started all of this for you?
Yeah. I've never really dipped down into New York City. I grew up about 3 hours north of it. Right. I think we had one little family trip for a day, taking a train down to, you know, go to Ellis Island and see all that fun sort of stuff. But, you know, the most time I ever spent in New York City was when I did an episode of Blue Bloods. It was like the winter of like 2013-14. We froze our butts off, but had a great time. It was almost Christmas. So I saw a Rockettes show. I saw the Spider-Man Broadway show, my only Broadway show I've ever seen.
You know what's funny about that? A friend of mine was the guitar player that did a lot of the music for that show, and a singer in his band was Spider-Man. So it's so crazy that you saw that. Tell me, how was that show? Because I heard very mixed reviews about that show.
I know it was plagued with a lot of issues, but I think you too did the music for this, and it just kind of speaks to who I am. That the only first and only Broadway show I've ever seen was about a comic book character. So I loved it. I thought it was really creative, really fun. You had Spider-Man doing wire work all over top of the audience and everything. So I was super happy and that's awesome. For a house seats. And
so no Spider-Man hanging above the audience, because I heard there were times that he was just like stuck, you know, like
oh, no.
You know? Yeah, a lot of shows where that happened. That's where they had to change some of the antics, you know, that he was doing. So that's awesome. So did you ever take a theater class in high school, elementary school? Nothing? You just were like, I'm gonna go to LA and see what I could do. Did you have an inkling to like want act at all and just be in the environment? Like, tell me a little bit about that, because that's crazy. It's awesome.
I've never taken a theater class. I never did drama club. I was just I grew up in a very small town, you know, playing three sports every single year round. And you know, my only exposure to theater and plays was when they, you know, had a high school assembly and made us sit through the latest, you know, school production and stuff, which was great and fantastic. But I've never really had an inkling at all. I never came to LA with the intention of ever acting whatsoever. But I was so entrenched in the industry, you know, because we work with TV and film actors. And so I was, you know, on the Paramount lot. I was, you know, in the green room of things like The Tonight Show all the time, red carpet premieres. And just meeting so many people in the industry, a lot of them just kind of planted the seed and got curious as we worked together over the years. And I said, yeah, I'll give it a shot, and took some classes and stuff, and really started from scratch and just kind of had fun. And there was no pressure because it wasn't a lifelong goal or dream. So I really just got to enjoy the process for what it is, take it slow, take it casually, you know, get into it, get out of it, get into it, get out of it a little bit. But it wasn't until I think about the Sniper Reloaded film that I did in South Africa, the first Sniper of seven that I've been blessed to do, that I really, and I wanted to see it through full time.
Well, you know what's crazy too? It's like you were on the show originally with the whole cast of Extinct, and you guys all did an amazing job. And like, you definitely had like a vibe. You were like one of the leading characters of that show. And you know, I was kind of bummed that it was only on for a season. Isn't that right? For one season? Or
yeah, I think unfortunately, I think the title of the show is ominous. You know, we went extinct pretty fast, sadly. But we had a blast, and it was just an amazing group of people. And you know, obviously you met all my fellow co-stars who were so talented and worked very hard. And you know, it was very heartbreaking to have it only go one season, because I know the fans and the traction in the audience was there. But you know, it's show business, and it's business top down, and they make the decisions that they do. And you know, we just go back on the hunt for the next opportunity.
Well, what's so cool too, you've been doing so many other projects that are like geared towards the superhero, or like, you know, the video game hero, and all it's just like as a part of your vibe, which is awesome. Tell me, did you like start taking like special effects classes? Did you have to do that in some of the training of these roles? Like, what did you have to do to kind of like arm yourself with kind of like the strengths of learning how to be a superhero in some of these, you know, like all of these hero, you know, pictures are, you know, they're more strenuous than people think. Like, you know, I was watching that clip that you posted the other day. I was like, that stuff's not easy. I mean, it looks like it's choreographed, but I mean, you're still going to get bruised. You're still going to get hit. You're still going to take some shots that weren't expected. You're still going to sprain ankles. Tell me what that process was like for you to kind of learn how to be a superhero.
Yeah, I haven't been able to strap on a cape or a spandex suit so much, but I am lucky to be able to play a pretend soldier. And I love that. It speaks to the G.I. Joe fan in front of me, you know, going all the way back to being a kid. So, you know, between Call of Duty, sniper movies, and even the stuff I've done in television, it's predominantly cops, military. You know, I love that. I always try to be a sponge working with the great experts that they always have on set for, whether it's, you know, former Navy SEALs or Marine Scout snipers. You just kind of pick their brains, and you kind of add it to your repertoire and your arsenal. And what you're referencing is was a little pickup stunt shot that we did for our Sniper Grit film, you know, where I had to kind of wrestle a stuntman to the ground and then rip the gun out of his hands and kill two oncoming hostiles and then finish him, obviously, and then get on my merry way. So the stunt stuff is a really fun part of the job for me. But you're right, it does come with its nicks and bruises and injuries and cuts. But it's never lost on me that the stunt guys always end up in worse shape than I do. So they're the real heroes. I'm just a fake one.
Well, and I should correct myself, not superhero, heroes. All these roles are heroes. Are there roles that you kind of like feel like you love sinking your teeth into as far as like the levels of character? Like, do you like playing kind of like a badass? Do you prefer to play, you know, something that has levels of, you know, depth? Or are you into like, you know, just making an action hero come to life, like, you know, because that's really an amazing feat. All of those things kind of have layers, but I mean, all those things are not easy to do. So tell me, like, what makes you drawn to a role? What makes you kind of like feel like I can really pull this off and live this character?
No, it's a great question. And it's great. It's fun to be the hero, and there's nothing better than that. Usually the heroes survive till the end, which is, you know, opens the door for the character to come back, unlike the poor villains. But, you know, as I've been able to kind of sink, you know, my teeth into some more villain or justifiably bad characters, it's a wicked fun, you know, and there really is, it's that flip side of the coin where they're always, you know, justified in the way they see things and what they're doing. So those opportunities have been really, really fun. I get a lot more of those now, whereas before it was strictly kind of the good guy stuff. And I think any actor will tell you over time, they really relish the opportunity to kind of play the dark side of a character. It's just a lot more interesting and free and fun.
Right. And, you know, I saw that. I can see you have a gaming chair, so you must be into video games on some level. And to get the Call of Duty show, you know, like, that must have been such a full circle moment for you, because I'm sure you played that game. I played that game. And, you know, like, then you're living the character. Like, did the kind of video game experience kind of enhance how the direction you were taking the character? Or did you kind of like start anew and want it to become something different and kind of form your own identity with the character?
Yeah, I think video games have come so far that it used to be predominantly a voice actor dominated industry. But now, because of the cinematics that they shoot and the realistic technology that they have, you need actors who can really deliver that in a through and through performance. But I've been a gamer my whole life. I've got a Nintendo and Super Nintendo Mini behind me. You know, I grew up on those systems. I've always been a gamer, more on the fantasy RPG side of things. But, you know, it's a dream come true to be in a video game that I've played over the years, Call of Duty, to be able to bring that to life and bring a character to life in that epic franchise, which just celebrated like 20 years. Of Call of Duty. It's basically what Star Wars is to movies, and that ubiquitousness of it is kind of Call of Duty is to gaming. So it's been a real privilege to do that, and it's a fun extension of TV and film acting, you know. And it also feels like you got all the components of film acting, but then you also have kind of like a performative theater type experience in the way that they kind of film and you interact with your co-stars. So that's been new to me, and I really love the process, even if it's slightly different. And you know, I being a gamer myself, even if I'm not a good one on Call of Duty, I welcome the opportunity to do it more.
Well, that it's a huge responsibility too, and you know this, because there's so many people that when they're playing a video game and then it comes to a movie part, there's expectations, maybe things you're not even aware of that gamers know, and they're just in deep with these characters, you know, like they're probably like, you know, snarkily saying, oh, that character wouldn't do that with any character. So do you kind of like feel that there's an added pressure just because of the gaming community when something gets on the screen from the gaming world?
Yeah, it's a great point. And it's not lost on me that, you know, you could sit and watch a Marvel movie for an hour and a half, 2.5 hours, whatever it is. And you could be a big fan of Thor and Captain America and all the other great characters that they have in the MCU. But, you know, for instance, to play a Call of Duty campaign, it's like 6 to 8 hours. And you're playing as this character the entire time. You are strapping yourself in their boots from their perspective. Right. And so you can kind of understand why video game fans have such an incredible attachment to these characters, because they kind of get to live and breathe it in an interactive movie kind of way. Whereas before, you're third person, you're outside looking in, whereas a video game literally inserts you into that interactive experience. So I can understand why the video game fans are so passionate about these characters, because they're literally living them and breathing them.
So let's talk Sniper, because this is such a cool movie series, etc. Tell me, like, what drew you to it? Tell me, what was the first time, what was an audition like for you, just like in the first one? And tell me, like, how you feel, like, movie to movie, how this can kind of grow either as a character or as a, you know, a whole entity, you know, in the movie world.
Yeah. So what you're referencing, for those that don't know, is a Sony action franchise. I've been really fortunate to be in for many, many years now. Sniper, the Sniper franchise, Tom Berenger. originated this role in 1993. Him and Billy Zane starred in a theatrical film called Sniper. Tom did like two more. They kind of shelved the franchise. And then they came back around in like 2009, 2010. And I was fortunate enough to play a lead role as they rebooted the franchise. And I played Tom Berenger's son, Brandon Beckett. Wow. And we just released the 10th overall in the franchise and the 7th one I've been lucky to be a lead of. Sniper Grit. I got show and tell for you, Nikki.
That's awesome.
Just came out in September. So we're still making them. Audiences around the world and here in the States are still loving them. Our last one went to Netflix after we released it in the summer and then in Netflix by the winter. And we somehow cracked the top 10 most watched Netflix films in the U.S. For like 9 days, which blew my mind, considering the heavyweights we were up against on the Netflix platform. So there's an audience for it, and it's been very, very good to me. And, it came to me at a time when I didn't have much else, you know, under my belt. I did Lake Placid 2. I did a couple of Hallmark movies. And this was just a beautiful serendipitous opportunity where it ended up being my part to lose, and knock on wood, I didn't lose it. And it was the Sniper Reloaded 2010-11, took me to South Africa, got to work with Billy Zane, which was phenomenal. And it was great. And that kind of changed everything for me. It was a huge epiphany moment where then I put together a 5 to 7 year plan to get out of the corporate end of things and into the full-time acting end of things. So that's really the thing that set off the rest of my career and hustle and grind, as you say.
That's awesome. Let's play the trailer. Here's the trailer for Sniper Grit.
Gentlemen, I've got good news. Lady Death is alive.
I didn't know we thought she was dead, sir.
I sent her on a mission to terminate Ivan Bubalov.
The cult leader?
And his regime is quickly gaining the political and territorial foothold to cause serious unrest in the region. Gentlemen, your mission is to extract Lady D and finish what she started.
Let's get to work.
Go! The CIA can't officially be involved. That's where we come in.
Is Yuki safe?
Yeah, she's fine.
What about the girl?
She's working for the United States.
Find her!
At any cost.
Well, Dee, there's a tracking device on you.
I've lost contact with my team. I need help finding them, assuming they're still alive. Let's go.
I don't even know how to use this.
Do this.
Honestly, that was pretty easy. Thought there'd be more of them.
May God bless the state of Aragon.
I have them.
Is it done?
No, it isn't.
That's awesome, man. Dude, what a cast. And dude, it looks so fun. That must have been amazing to shoot. Where were you in South Africa, by the way?
South Africa was, these sniper movies have taken me all around the world, man. It's unreal. I've just filled my passport, book with amazing stamp, colorful stamps. But, this one we did in Malta, actually.
Oh, wow.
A little tiny island off the Sicily.
I was just in Sicily in about 3 weeks ago. So
yeah, oh,
man.
Nice.
Yeah, man. Malta is an awesome part of the world. So you were in Malta for Sniper, the Grit one. And then the first one you were in South Africa.
Yep.
That's amazing. Where else have you been for all this? For all of them?
I have to say that, you know, the least exotic locations have been Winnipeg and Vancouver, but every other one has been, you know, Bogota, Colombia. We've been into Bulgaria a couple times, Turkey, Greece. It's just been absolutely incredible to take in the people and the culture and the different countries as a result of being in these movies.
So what was the hardest thing you had to adapt or learn while taking on this role? Or like maybe it's from movie to movie. Tell me what the hardest thing for you to learn was.
You know, it's not It's not, I mean, we're making a movie, right? So I actually don't have to hit a shot from a mile away. So it's,
you got to make it look like you did.
I know, you know, and you got to fake the recoil and all that sort of stuff. There's subtle nuances that you do, but we've always been pretty blessed to have wonderful, like I said, technical advisors. And usually they have real life, hands-on, high-level military experience. And I just attach myself to the hip to these wonderful, you know, teachers, because they're happy to show you the proper way to do it. And I always find that it's better to come in with absolute humility, even if you kind of know your way around a gun or a firearm or something like that, to just be like, just pretend I've never even seen one and walk me through it to make sure that I get this right and kind of develop that muscle memory to represent you as accurately as I can. Because, you know, military veterans, they love to watch these movies. They love to play Call of Duty, and they can't help themselves. You know, they're lifers in that world. So they're looking, you know, to be represented well. And
well, and they're the first ones to be like, oh my God, this doesn't even look right.
Yeah.
Or you're like, you know, it's like how you load the firearm. There's so many things, you know, like people just know when they're in that world, they know. So do they have the same people kind of like, you know, that you were referencing, or did it change from movie to movie? And did you kind of have to learn different things per weapon, or, you know, there's a different way to handle a handgun versus a sniper gun. So like, tell me, what are the little nuances and the differences just between those two things?
Yeah. And I think what is kind of next level is you find this out as you go is, you know, different. It's available, you know, we're an international production usually. So, you know, sometimes we get an American soldier, you know, with us. And sometimes we work with people who might be from Canada or, you know, boots on the ground in South Africa, all very experienced and know their way around a firearm. But different armies and different branches of the military will do things very differently, you know, and they will kind of fight and argue about the proper way to do something as an army as opposed to Marines and stuff like that. So you try to get those things right, understand your character. You know, Brandon Beckett is a Marine infantry who becomes a sniper. So understanding that would be his training and the nuances that the Marines have as part of their training is something to try to incorporate into the character to represent that very well. So, you know, and it was an interesting thing, not to switch gears on Call of Duty, but when I did Call of Duty Modern Warfare 19, where my Alex character was originated, you know, we had wonderful Navy SEALs, at the highest level, you know, like missions they can't talk about. And they were on set with us almost every day. They gave us an extra day with them to just work, because my character's American, you know, SAD, CIA, you name it. You know, this is British SAS. This is a freedom fighter, you know, in a Middle Eastern setting. So everyone's going to not only use different weapons, but they're going to handle the weapons differently. Their training and style is going to be different. And so we spent a lot of time kind of puzzling out the subtle nuances between these characters according to their military backgrounds to make sure it was as real and accurate as possible.
That's crazy. And like, Navy SEALs are like ridiculous about what they do, what they can do just physically, and then what they have to do mentally just to get into that world and like do some of those missions that nobody sometimes ever hears about. You know what I mean? They're all like top secret. Yeah. They're, you know, they come in and out. What were some of the things that you kind of learned from them? Was it the discipline of like what they do, or was it just like the attention to detail to what they do to kind of apply it to all these characters?
I mean, yeah, they're so incredibly knowledgeable. And these fellows in particular have been all around the world on dozens of missions. So they got to see what freedom fighters looked and sounded and how they fought guerrilla warfare style. They got to see this sort of stuff. Wow. And of course, they always worked with other branches and cooperated with other special units and everything else too. So I just want to represent Alex, who's an American, as well as possible, you know, from a standard kind of branch of American military. So they're incredibly knowledgeable and they kind of piece stuff together. But it was so much about getting the tactical movement right.
Right.
And so much of that is about, you know, how you hold your gun when you're not firing. So much of that is, you know, trigger finger ready, you know, guns down, you know, ready position. It's really just, it's all, you know, because in the cinematic scenes, we're not really blasting away.
Right. You
know, it's usually we just complete a hairy mission and then we all kind of come together and powwow and talk. So getting the body language right, getting the ready position right and the relaxed positions right. And the tactical movement stuff when you are working through some of the action is those are the details you need to pay attention to, you know.
And you know what? Those are the details that nobody really understands. That's what's right. really cool. Like, even you saying that, like, I've never watched like any kind of hero movie and thought, I wonder if he's in resting position or he's, you know what I mean? But that is such an important detail because you don't want it to look cheesy. You want it to look accurate. You want it to
You don't want it to stand out the wrong way, right? Because, you know, you don't want to spit anyone out of the immersion. So, you know, they'll let you know if you're getting it wrong. But, you know, in the meantime, you want to give them the experience of getting it all right so that they're not, you know, looking at you all cockeyed, right?
So you were like one of the younger cats in this cast. And you had a slew of older actors that you kind of were able to draw from. Did anybody kind of like give you kind of influence or kind of like, you know, great advice just like getting into this world or just like learning how to get into characters or stay in the character? What was some of the best advice that you got from some of these older actors that you were around?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. And it's never been lost on me. I got a lot of really great opportunities even early in my career where I did get to work with absolutely talented, very experienced actors. And, you know, I had a very strong intention to just be a sponge because why wouldn't I learn, you know, from people who have done this at the highest level, everybody from Billy Zane to Tom Berenger to Dennis Haysbert and the Sniper franchise. I got to work with Neil McDonough on a World War II movie, who's a phenomenal actor. You know, even on TV shows and, you know, working with Gary Sinise, I remember one of my very first, you know, TV credits was CSI New York back in the day. And so it's never been lost on me to kind of pick the brains of and just study and watch what these high performing actors at the highest level have been able to, you know, to do and to accomplish. And it's great. You know, I got to work with Jeff Fahey, you know, on three movies in a row. And I've always been a big fan of him. And he's such a talented actor as well. So I'm probably forgetting more than I can remember. That's how blessed I've been. But I've always had the intention of being a sponge.
Well, you know, and the other thing is like, do you use method acting? Like, do you, you know, use Uta Hagen's like respect for acting? Like, what's your kind of method to kind of get into character? Like, what are you drawing from?
Yeah, I've had no classical training. So I suppose if I had to define a style, it's like, naturalistic, you know, because so much about acting for TV and film is the technical aspect. It's about finding your light. It's about staying in frame. It's about not blocking your other character. It's about hitting your mark, you know, doing your walk and talk and timing these sorts of things out. And you can't shortchange the acting process and the creative and the performances, you know, but I was lucky enough to just start studying at schools in LA that really focused on the on-camera work. No classical training whatsoever. I've never done theater. None of these techniques or anything that I've ever studied hardcore. So I've been able to really learn mostly through experience on set. And then of course, developing the skill set and working the muscles, you know, in acting classes. And still, I've always tried to take acting classes with actors who are in it, you know, who've done it, who've been in it and are still out there busting their butts with the auditions and being on the different sets and the different variety of things it takes to build a career. And I've always really appreciated working with actors who are kind enough to spend their time teaching less experienced actors.
Right.
And because, you know, I mean, these techniques could be incredibly useful and that's all great and fine. You know, mine is more of kind of a Frankenstein's monster of things I've picked up over the years between experience and classes and being a sponge from actors who, you know, do it far better than me.
Well, and it's also like the directors that they're shaping a lot of like what you're learning. I'm sure there were different directors on each Sniper film. Is that true? So like, what did you kind of draw from, or how did you kind of like, you know, collaborate with the director to kind of like define the character that you were kind of building along the way?
Yeah. What's interesting is, you know, I'm pretty lucky to do a lot of action films and Sniper certainly qualifies as an action film franchise. You know, and when you're working with a bit of a modest, you know, budget, when you don't have $150 million to play with for an extraction movie, you know, every day, every shot counts. And the most important thing about an action movie is getting the action and elevating the action. So there's not always the powwows about the creative performance and this and that, and whatever else. It really is about sticking the action thing because that's what people are really, you know, putting their butts in the seat for. So, you know, but every director has a different style, you know, and I think that, you know, you certainly don't want to shortchange the creative process and the dramatic scenes and stuff like that too. So you do a lot of that work and you collaborate with the directors and, make sure you nail the action stuff. So it's, you know, it's fun all around, but you know, I always find that in action films, the focus is really on nailing that action and just kind of
there's a reason
the actors to bring the drama when they need to.
Right. There's a reason that the action is first in the name action film. Right. So we're going to play a scene, set us up with a little bit of what the scene's going to be.
Mm. I think this is the extended preview for Sniper Grit that they dropped after release. So this is a bit of the opening of the movie. You know, we're on assignment. We're over in Malta trying to take down a cult that's got kind of a puppet master leader. He's got his hands in all sorts of politics and corruption and wars and black market stuff. And so we've been kind of assigned to take him and his heads out. And kind of do our good work in the world while also trying to rescue our compatriot, Lady Death, who was last seen, you know, trying to infiltrate them and we never heard from her again. So I think this is me and Ryan Robbins, who plays Agent Zero, setting up shop, infiltrating the stronghold and, you know, hopefully taking out the big bad.
Doing the good work. Here's the preview. Here's a scene from Sniper Grit.
Yeah, it's a bummer. I was looking forward to that game. But duty calls, so I gave the tickets to my ex-wife.
Sid, you mentioned how excited he was to go. That was big of you.
What do you mean?
Well, you know, not everyone's on such good terms with their ex-wife's new husband.
No, no, not that. I mean, what do you mean Sidney mentioned?
Last time we were on the phone. Said how pumped he was. Well, he invited me, actually.
The last time you were on the phone? When were you on the phone? With my ex-wife's new husband.
Well, it wasn't just him. Shelly, too. We were Zooming, and she popped in, and... Well, don't worry. I told him I couldn't go, if that's what you're thinking.
No, no, that's not what I'm thinking.
Okay, good.
What I'm thinking is you were Skyping with my ex-wife's husband.
Zooming.
Zooming, right, my bad. Why the hell were you Zooming?
This time,
This time? There have been other times.
I mean, yeah, you know, every now and then when it's too hard to meet up in person.
Okay. Just you, Shelley, and Sydney. That's lovely.
It is. It really is.
Oh, no, by all means, continue. Gentlemen, I've got good news. Lady Death is alive.
I didn't know we thought she was dead, sir.
Is she okay?
For the past 6 months, while you two were in Colombia, I sent her on a mission to terminate Ivan Bubalo.
The cult leader?
Oh, no, no. He's much more than a cult leader. They call him Bubalo the Conqueror. And his regime is quickly gaining the political and territorial foothold to cause serious unrest in the region. Where he was once at war with the legitimate government of Malta, he and his cronies have now managed to put an entirely new administration in place, one with which he works hand in hand. His cult, or terrorist cell, call themselves the State of Aragon. And unlike Al-Qaeda and Hezbollah, their allegiance is not to God or Allah. It is to Bubalo. This is good for us. I feel if we can cut off the head, we can kill the snake. And the State of Aragon will come to a swift end. The head will need to be not only Bubalo's, but his top-ranking officials. 5 in total.
And you sent LD to do just that, I take it?
6 months ago. After she infiltrated the base, I lost contact. I haven't heard from her since. Until now. She sent an SOS signal from a phone that we traced back to Bubalo's palace. Gentlemen, your mission is to extract Lady D and finish what she started.
Find LD and cut off the head of the snake. Copy.
All 6 snakes. The CIA can't officially be involved. That's where we come in.
Okay. Let's get to work.
Now.
buddy. Sweet dreams.
That was awesome. That was awesome. So watching that, I know a lot of actors, they never love watching themselves, like themselves doing something. Is it awkward to watch yourself like in something like this? Like, it's got to be a little bit weird, but man, it's so entertaining. You definitely own the role. Absolutely.
I think when I watch, and I don't watch my stuff, you know, all that often, is, you know, I watch once to see what, you know, scenes I can pull for a reel to give to my representation. And then I usually also watch, just excited about, you know, seeing my co-stars work, and especially for the scenes that I wasn't there in with them. So, and just kind of celebrating the entire thing. Cause it's like a video journal, you know, I was there every day, and to watch the final movie come together, you remember, oh, I was there that day. That was at that location. That scene was really, really fun. Or that was a hot day, or the weather killed us that day, or that was a long day. So it's really fun. And, you know, shout out before we go further, I just want to say, I know you're a talented musician in your own right. So, I just wanted to give shout out to Oliver Thompson, our writer director, who did all the music.
Wow.
And he's really put a rock and roll kind of sensibility to it too, which I appreciate as a huge rock and roll fan. But, that's just a little taste of some of the rad music that's also in this movie.
Well, what's so cool, it adds so much to the dynamics, you know,
it does.
It's like you're in it. You're in it when you're listening to it and watching what the visuals are doing. Are there ever times where you like, because you have to know, probably even for those scenes, you probably did at least 3 or 4 takes, right? You know, is there ever a time where you're like, man, I wish the director didn't use that take? Are you like, oh, cool, you used that one. That was the one I was hoping for. Like, what's that like? Because do you see the differences in some of the stuff that you've done, like little nuances or like things you were hoping would be in it, or happy that you are, that, you know, that certain scenes were selected? How does that feel when you're watching it?
Yeah. And I think the general rule in any actor who's worked on lower budget stuff is, where time is so precious, you know, you're lucky to get 1 or 2, you know, and unless there's a technical issue with lighting or camera, that's going to be it. So preparation is the key. The smaller the budget, the more the actor must be prepared, because you're probably not going to get 4 to 5 to 10 bites at the apple like you would on something, but they just don't have the time for it. So, you know, for me, it's you know, making the most of this sort of stuff. But, you know, you try to establish a good director relationship, and you say, you know, that was crap. I think I could give you better. I think I could give you more, or I think I could give you another option, you know, for the edit. And they're almost always very graceful and let you know, do it again, you know, but you don't always want to do that every single time. But I've always found that they're incredibly open to it. You know, if it's going to serve the scene, if it's going to serve the movie, it's going to make their job easier. They're happy to give you the extra 5 minutes.
And, you know, like, I always think about, like, putting an ensemble like this together in the desert with sets, with all the intricacies that you're going to have, things are going to kind of like, they're not going to work sometimes. Did you ever have downtime where like, oh, this, you know, the bathroom door to the mission, you know, to the mission base is not operating? No. Did you have anything like that happened while you were on set?
This happens all the time. You know, hats off to producers and line producers and everybody who, you know, grease the wheels on these massive productions, because you're always going to find something that breaks, or, you know, the location falls through, or, you know, it's never ending problem solving. And I think everybody just kind of accepts that when they get into this industry. So I guess that just, you know, goes back to my original point, where you know, as an actor, you don't ever want to be the one holding things up, because enough things go wrong. It could be the weather. It could be, you know, a location's falling apart. It could be a vehicle that won't start, you know, jams in a gun. You know, it could be any number of variables they have to adjust and adapt for. So, you know, actors that are not prepared is a little inexcusable, you know, compared to all this other, you know, unfortunate Murphy's Law stuff.
Well, I mean, it's hard enough to have like an indie film, you know, do something on its own, but then adding the action factor, and then you're adding weapons, cars, sets, and then it's like you have to show up every day and just be in that headspace. Like, that's not an easy thing for every artist to do. You know what I mean? It's, you have to be, you know, in a certain like mindset to pull off the character every day. Well, how long was the shoot from beginning to end for your involvement?
Yeah, we had, I think it was basically a 23 to 25 day shoot total. We had shooting days. So I was there for about five weeks and, you know, stayed for another week to kind of really take in the beautiful country, the island itself. So, but that's pretty typical, anywhere between 20 and 25 days, depending on what we have to shoot and how complicated it is. So, yeah, really enjoyed my time over there.
And did you have to do table reads and stuff like that before? Did you do any of that?
No, the nice thing about, you know, Sniper Grit is that we've kind of established a team going back, you know, three movies now, which is something we never did. Sniper movies used to be little one-offs where the only common character was me and or Tom Berenger and or Billy Zane and or Dennis Haysbert in some capacity. And it was a revolving, you know, kind of cast of teammates and actors and stuff like that. So they really established a team here where, you know, Dennis is back, you know, in the fold for the last two movies. My co-star who you saw in there, Ryan Robbins, plays Agent Zero. Hats off to him. He's incredible to work with. You know, and then of course Lady Death, and you didn't see Intelligence Pete, but he's become he's a resident tech nerd, hacker. he has a really, really great scenes with Dennis Haysbert in this movie too. So it was really nice to have the team dynamic kind of pick up where he left off in the last movie and lean more into the layers of those relationships and have a lot more fun.
Well, let's play a little bit more of this scene so we don't leave people hanging. Here's the rest of that scene. Sam, we got it? Sam, we got it? Oh, he said he can't play it from the middle. Well, we're not going to play it again. All right.
You'll have to get the movie.
You'll have to get the movie. So you told me that it was out it was already out in October or September, right?
Yeah, September 26th. We released on digital and VOD, and the DVD dropped a week or two later in early October.
That's exciting. Are they going to do another one? Have you already kind of like been in talks about doing another film yet?
I mean, I think that there's always interest in doing more. I never really am privy to those details. I'm a gun for hire, literally. So there's been talk, there's been speculation, but, you know, at those levels on a studio level, I'm sure there's all sorts of red tape and bureaucracy and approvals and sign-offs and stuff like that. And everything is timing and orchestrated and planned. So, you know, hopefully that's the case for 2024. And if and when I can say something, I certainly will. I hope so.
Well, you know, it's so difficult too, and there's so much stuff in the, you know, the stratosphere when it comes to art. Like, how do you feel? Like, how do things get marketed to get, you know, through? Because there's just so much stuff. You know what I mean? It's just how it is. Do you find that people are finding stuff on streaming sites, using the internet? Are they still going to theaters? Like, how are people consuming art from your perspective? Because I'm just curious, because I'm always like trying to figure out new ways with the music thing, you know what I mean? So yeah. I mean you guys put in so much time into all of these films, and it's like, you know, they all have limited marketing budgets, they have all limited, you know, budgets to make the thing. How do you think things can move the needle or kind of get into people's, you know, periphery?
Yeah, you're right. There's such a glut of content out there and platforms, and I can't even imagine how you go about this as a musician like yourself. But
it's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, you know, what an interesting asset that's always been in my back pocket is having started in the industry, you know, doing publicity, public relations, and having media relationships, lovely ones like yourself, and to be able to add that little bit of extra, putting the good stuff out there, giving a little taste, and if people want to bite, they can go out there and find it easily, you know, make sure that that stuff's available for them. So, you know, we don't really do theatrical runs, you know, with these movies, but, you know, we
eventually. Why is that? Who makes that decision?
Well, I just think it's incredibly expensive to go ahead and do that. And if you kind of, you know, extrapolate that out across the budget and what you'd additionally have to pump into it to do a theatrical run. I actually think that, you know, we might, you know, do more surprisingly better than people would think, because I see the return. You know, we go any sniper movie, even if it's a few years old, when it finally drops in a foreign territory on Netflix, it goes right to number one. It's unbelievable. Fans keep me posted all the time. You know, number one here, number one here, number one. And we had an older movie, Sniper Assassin Zen, finally drop in South America on Netflix. And it was number one in 19 countries and number two in Brazil out of the gates. And this is pretty consistent feedback and results that we see. So I really think the international audience loves these things. It's great to see, you know, us being on US Netflix in a very timely manner. And
yeah,
you know, we're doing a great job and cleaning up there too. So, you know, I think people got really comfortable like being at home and making their own popcorn and, you know, stretching out in the recliner to be able to watch movies from home. I know I enjoy it, you know, but and the theater is also a special experience. But, you know, how you cut through is hopefully you build a fan base and you just stay active on social media, make it easy for people to watch and discover it as much as you can. And, you know, talk to wonderful outlets like you have here.
It's got a built-in audience. You know, like that's one thing I've learned with everything I've done with music. It's like you have to start with an audience and you have to slowly kind of like just acquire people. But what's cool about the sniper films, it's like there, I did watch the original one, like back in the, it was like in the early 90s, I think. Right. So yeah. I wanted to ask you, growing up watching all these kind of hero films, who were some of your favorite hero films? Cause you're kind of that guy now. It's like, that's your role. So like, who were those people for you that you were like, oh my God, I love this movie. I love this hero. And this is why.
Yeah, well, I remember the original film too, with Behringer in 1993. It left a really indelible impression on me, you know, when I watched it on cable. I think TBS was the network at the time that always played those movies, or TNT. But look, man, I grew up on Roadhouse. I grew up on the Arnold and the Sly movies, some of the Chuck Norris stuff. I always loved Clint Eastwood, spaghetti westerns, and things of that nature. As well, you know, all the way up and through, you know, the Bravehearts and the Gladiators and everything else too. So I've always been a big fan of these movies and these actors in this genre. And it's really fun to kind of be in the same arena, you know, even on a much smaller scale. It's a dream. It's fun.
You know what I mean? So it's like you're living your childhood, you know, fantasy of like doing all these things as an adult, dude. Like that just doesn't happen. You know what I mean? You don't think about it, but it's like, you're basically Rambo. You're basically Bruce Willis. You're basically Arnold Schwarzenegger in Commando. And
look, man, if I can con my way into the next iteration of G.I. Joe movies, I'm happy to go out on top, Tom Brady style, with something like that. That would be the ultimate chef's kiss.
So that's the
fucking lit-filled career.
That's the I want to be a part of the G.I. Joe franchise. Yeah.
Oh my gosh,
that's awesome. Well, you know, you're not far from it, man. You know, you may think like, I'm doing the sniper movies. I don't know if it's going to get to that level, but you know, it will. It will. Just
we're,
keep
hustling. We're playing in that orbit, so we'll see if there's ever any crossover.
That's awesome. Well, where can people find this movie? Where can people download it? Where can people stream it?
Yeah, so VOD, on digital on demand. You know, if you want to buy or rent digital copy, anything from Apple to Amazon, all the usual suspects. Sony has a platform as well where they sell, you know, movies. I think you can buy it on YouTube as well, YouTube movies.
Oh, that's awesome.
Or if you're a hard media collector, the DVD just came out. I'm not sure if there's a Blu-ray release as well. So you can kind of find it anywhere and all online and all very quick and very, very easy. So.
And where can people find you if they want to find you online, they want to follow you and your career, or if there's a producer out there that's looking for somebody to get into the next G.I. Joe movie, how can they find you?
Yeah, I'm easy to find. The big three, you know, Facebook, X, formerly known as Twitter, the artist formerly known as Twitter, the platform formerly known as Twitter, X, and then, of course, Facebook and Instagram. And, you know, those are the big three. I also have I stream on Twitch. And I've been playing Call of Duty, our Call of Duty games on Twitch for years now. And Modern Warfare 3 just released. So we drop into the war zone live on stream. I put those videos on my YouTube channel that I'm trying to to grow, where I give a lot of insight, you know, behind the scenes of acting and a lot of the BTS videos I take on sets, what it's like to be in the vocal, you know, voice recording booth for video games. So I love kind of offering those behind the scenes look that I'm trying to do more of over on the YouTube channel, as well as put Call of Duty content and streams up there too. So those are the big three.
You gotta wear all the hats. You're doing it, man. Well, you know what? Thank you for being a guest on Wake Up Hollywood again. You know what? We're going to keep on following you. We're going to keep on having you back. You just let us know when you're involved with something because, man, you're a great cat. You're a talented cat. And I see big things for you up ahead. So keep hustling, man, because that's what it's about. And thank you again for being a guest on Wake Up Hollywood and sharing your story, sharing your insight. And today you were the feature. It wasn't the whole cast. It was just you, buddy. Just you. See? That's a sign of bigger things to come, man. That's how it works. Great.
I appreciate you, Nikki. So great to reconnect with you after all these years. And thanks for the love and thanks for the support. And of course, hopefully if you get a chance to check out the Sniper movie, I'd love to hear your feedback, especially with that musical ear that you have.
Yeah, man, I'll have to start from the beginning. You're in the first one, right?
Oh yeah, I mean Sniper Grit. The music is gonna blow you away. It's such a It's almost a star in and of itself in this film, and I know that you're quite attuned.
Well, I'll check it out. I'll definitely check it out, and I'll send you a message. I'll be like, "Yo, man, I watched it. This is what I'll do over Thanksgiving break, man. I love watching movies like that." So, man, I'll definitely check you out. Thank you again, Chad Collins, on behalf of Sam, myself, and Chad. We'll see you guys next week. Thanks for tuning in, and take care of each other. Happy Thanksgiving! Woo!
Thanksgiving.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Corulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.